London calling. David here. I've got on the other end of the line Richard Rock, better known to London walkers as Richard III. Not after the Shakespeare character, but there's a lot of Richards on this team, about five or six, and Richard was the third one along. Anyway, this is not about that. This is about Richard. So, hello, Richard, and tell us a bit about Richard, please. Well, where you grew up, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I grew up in London, David. I was born in University College Hospital. My father was a Londoner, middle-class bank clerk. My mother was a Northerner from County Durham, and she was very working class. And she had come down at the age of 16 into domestic service to London. And it was a way of getting one less mouth to feed, sending her down into service. And she was in Paddington, which is where I spent the first 14 days of my life. And she was with a family there who didn't mistreat her, but they said that the money that she earned was being sent up to County Durham, to my mother's mother. And they said that to my mother's mother that they were giving my mother the money. So a bit bad of them, really. And then after she'd been with them for several months, they said they were going to Norfolk to a farm. And she'd lost contact completely with her family up in County Durham, so she went with them. And she found herself not doing farm work, but domestic service in Norfolk. Then she ran away and she got back to County Durham. My mother's mother, not very pleased to see her because another mouth to feed. And then met my father, and in 6 weeks they married. And on her 40th birthday, she had twins, me and my brother, in University College Hospital.
Identical or fraternal?
Fraternal.
Fraternal twins.
We're quite different.
And was your dad a Londoner as well then?
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
Bred and born?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, you say you're a Londoner, but what part of London did you grow up in? I mean, it's 600 square miles, London.
Yeah. Well, first of all, felt 14 days in Paddington, and then we went to Chislehurst, which is South London. Until I was about nine, we lived there, and then we moved to North London, to Northwood, which is very much out on in the suburbs. It's Betjeman land. It's John Betjeman land. It's along the Metropolitan line. And there's a bit of a north-south divide in London, you know, the southerners and the northerners. If you look at the map of London, you can see only 10% of the tube is on the south bank of the River Thames. 90% is London. But actually, you know, it's pretty much half and half. There's this whole area of South London that North Londoners hardly ever go to. Anyway, we went from South London to North London, and then I went to school. And I had an early problem because when I was only two, I had lots of problems with my feet. I had talipes. My brother, my twin brother, had been sitting on my feet in the womb. Don't worry, I've been torturing him ever since to get my own back. It was actually what's called club foot, and Lord Byron had it. So I went to Great Ormond Street Hospital, which is the most wonderful children's hospital. And there was a pioneering technique that they knew, and they sorted me out. So it was thought that I wouldn't really walk properly when I was growing up. Later, my mother said she didn't want me to end up walking the streets. And of course, that's what I've done. It's my profession.
You're a professional walker. You walk brilliantly.
Yeah.
And you can walk endlessly. Yeah. So they sorted you. So as a schoolboy, were you a good boy or a bad boy?
I don't know. I think I don't think I was particularly bad or particularly good. I was trying to find my way. I went to a public school, which I really disapprove of.
But yeah, you might explain to our American listeners what a public school
is. A public school is a private school. We do it that to make it difficult for the foreigners to understand. because public servants went to school outside their homes and they were the first school. So a public school is a fee-paying school, whereas the state school is the one that's funded by the
government. And were you a day boy or did you board?
I didn't board. I was just a day boy because it was in London.
And did you already disapprove? Or did you disapprove of it?
No, I didn't question that. There's lots of things I didn't question until very late on. I was a very late developer.
Uh-huh.
I just accepted everything that was thrown at me, really, I think. So now I just think it's wrong to be able to buy better education or buy better health.
Uh-huh.
Just get it better because you've got the money. But it didn't cost that much in those days. And my parents didn't have a lot of money, but the money that they did have, they spent on this private education for me and my brother.
I see. And what did you like as a school? Were you sporty or did you like art or music?
Oh, I liked arts. I wasn't a sporty type. My brother was more sporty. He played football. And I loved literature. And I just read and read and read books.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. When did you read your first Dickens? This is for out of my personal curiosity.
I can't remember. I've got a terrible memory for what I did read at that time. I came a bit later to Dickens.
Yeah. So you get to age 16, and then what happens?
Well, everybody was very academic and very bright, and I wasn't thick, but I don't think I was the brightest bulb in the, whatever the saying is, academically. And my way round that in a school of super achievers who were all going to be government mandarins and captains of industry and that sort of thing was to try to go to drama school. And so that way I took the pressure off myself academically because I didn't need A-levels to go to drama school. So while they all went off to Oxford and Cambridge, I went off to the Central School of Speech and Drama.
And that was a 2-year course, a 3-year course?
A 3-year course.
And were you happy with that?
I loved it. I loved doing it, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a great time.
Were you in school plays when you were a kid growing up?
Yes, not that many because I wasn't too sure whether I would act, but I was, yeah.
Yeah. It's a good skill set, isn't it, for a walkie tour guide, being an actor.
It is. But I wish I'd taken the sciences more seriously and not been such a precious arty type, because I wish I had a greater understanding of them. I think they're so important.
Yeah. So when you got to 16 or 17, that age about, did you ever have a desire to up stakes and go to Australia or go to Canada and leave London?
No, I think I lacked the imagination for that sort of thing. No, never occurred to me.
So you liked being a Londoner. You liked living in London.
Yes, I did.
So you did some acting, you did this and that. And okay, so how does the London Walks thing come about? How did we get you?
Well, I was pretty unsuccessful actor. Everybody knew that except me.
Love it, Richard.
I hadn't noticed. Because in those days, David, in the 1980s, you got enough money on the dole to live. And I wasn't a materialistic person. I didn't need a lot of money. And I found I could do all sorts of things for next to nothing. You could do up to 15 hours of classes and history and art and music and dance, 15 hours a week without paying anything. And you're on the dole. And so I was doing quite well. And I suppose I didn't quite have that ambition. And so I was sort of happy coasting along. And then I did this dance class and I met Mary. And Mary said to me, would you like to be a guide? I think you'd probably be quite a good guide. And I said, darling, I'm an actor. I really don't need that. But it's very nice of you to ask. So condescended to her terribly. And she was very good about it. And after sort of years of her buying me coffee, because I never had the money for a coffee, and other people, and skanking off people, and living hand to mouth, but enjoying myself, I didn't need money. One day, rather grandly, I said, you know, I might give it a try, as if I was doing her a favour, you know. And that was it, and I loved it. And I found that it was much more enjoyable than acting, because you get to write your own script. A lot of acting is really rubbish, and often the scripts are not good. It's not all Shakespeare you're doing. You're often doing quite poor material. But here, you've got to write your own material, and I loved it.
Do you remember your first walk? Most people do.
I do. I remember. It was Hampstead.
Was it?
Yeah. I'd learnt it off you.
Oh, really?
You and Charles. I went on your walk, and I went on Charles's walk. Charles is being Mary's dad, you know.
Yeah.
Wonderful Charles Chilton. And so I pinched all your material. I pinched all his material. And I thought, yes, I can do this. And after about an hour and a half, which isn't really long enough, I thought, I've got away with this, but I don't know where I am. And if I go down that street, I'm not sure where it goes to. And I'd been told you're supposed to end at or near a tube station. And I had no idea where the tube station was. So I was really winging it. So I said, and that's the end of our walk. And they clapped. And I thought, my God, clapping. And then I buggered off as quickly. I got away as quickly as I could because I thought, someone's going to ask me where we are. You know, these little details that people like to know, or where the tube was. So I disappeared very quickly. I thought, I got away with that.
And did you ring up Mary afterwards? Or did she ring you?
I can't remember what happened after that.
But you were hooked. We got you then.
Yeah.
So you started out with, and what did you move on to from Hampstead? You're still doing Hampstead, aren't you?
Still doing Hampstead, yes. I can't remember what the next one I did was. Yeah, I can't remember.
Well, you say you weren't a very successful actor, but, you know, Richard, you've addressed the United Nations. You've been on the cover of Newsweek. I doubt very much if Tom Cruise has addressed the United Nations, or for that matter, been on the cover of Newsweek. Can we hear a little bit? You know, yeah, I want our listeners and London Walkers to hear a little bit about those two chapters in
your
life.
Well, that really wasn't much to do with acting. When I was at school, there was a boy at school whose father was a South African political prisoner. And that didn't mean anything to me. I wasn't political at school. But then during this period of going to dance classes with Mary and living on the dole and getting the occasional job, acting job, I went down to the South African embassy because I'd heard that this boy, as I was at school with, had been arrested in South Africa and there was a campaign to get him out. So I went down to the South African embassy in Trafalgar Square, and after several weeks of kicking up a hue and cry, we managed to get him released from prison. Now, his father was still in prison and had been when I was a school child, and I knew very little about apartheid, white supremacist rule. I wasn't particularly political, and I found about it and I learned about South Africa and I became very passionate about it. But I learned about my own country in learning about that country. And once you do something for a long time, you can't do it as an act of charity for other people. It's got to be an act of self-interest. I believe that politics is an act of self-interest, but I believe it's an act of class self-interest, wider self-interest than narrow self-interest. I found about Ireland, I found out about my own country, and from a very privileged middle-class point of view, I realised that there were a lot of homeless people because we had this non-stop picket outside the South African embassy that first of all lasted for 86 days and nights, and it got David Kitson, the political prisoner, moved to better conditions. He was very ill. And then we campaigned for the release of Nelson Mandela and all South African political prisoners. And we had a second picket that was there all day and all night. And we just stood there through the wind and through the rain for nearly 4 years.
4 years.
And that was a tremendous achievement. And I got arrested lots of times. And I saw the nature of the British police, who were not looking after defending our right to demonstrate. We had to fight for that. They were defending the state. And they also, I discovered that they were very racist. And as a white middle-class person, of course, I had no concept of that. But I saw it on the picket. And so that was my political conscience, really, was awakened on that. The Newsweek was on the poll tax riot in 1990. And I was arrested there. And they took this rather dramatic photo of me, which ended up on the cover of Newsweek.
You know, I've known you for a long time, and I did not know about that cover until you... Was it your legal London walk? The virtual tour.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
I was fascinated. I think that's absolutely wonderful. But you didn't explain about the United Nations.
Well, I was not speaking in a personal capacity. I was speaking on behalf of our group, the City of London Anti-Apartheid Group. And so I was elected to go by the group. And so I went to New York and spoke about the conditions for free and fair elections in South Africa. So that was bringing towards the end of the white minority rule.
Fantastic. So now you're doing some writing, I think. Is that why?
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. I've written 8 plays.
8 plays.
And a short play, which won a prize. And now I've just written my second novel.
Fantastic. What's that about?
It's about me, really. It's a coming-of-age story. It's very much about a young man coming to terms with his sexuality and with who he was.
Uh-huh.
So it is fiction, But it's one of these, and it's not memoir, it is fiction, but it's very much based on my own development as a person.
And is it set in London?
It is, yes.
Uh-huh. And do you have some favourite places in London, Richard?
Yes, I do. I love the whole area around the Inns of Court, because you step off a busy street, which in some ways could be in any large city in the world, and suddenly, as Dickens says, who enters here leaves noise behind. And you are in these oases of tranquility, which are really private land, but you can go on them. You're tolerated. They're not owned by the local authority. Mm-hmm. And all four of them are close by, and they are just beautiful architecturally, and you've got all the barristers walking around in them. And then I love the aspect that London has of being a collection of villages. So you go to somewhere like Hampstead, you go somewhere like Highgate, and you're 25 minutes from the British Museum, but it's like the countryside. And London has often been described as a collection of villages. And so it's very easy to get to these places that look just as they were 300, 400 years ago.
You still riding your bicycle?
Yes, yeah. Yeah,
still safely?
Like it. Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. It's a bit of a hazardous thing to do, but I do, yes.
Yeah. And do you have some London dislikes? Are there things about it that drive you crazy?
Well, it's very expensive. And I don't like the whole question of gentrification. And I don't like... I'll describe my street. I'm very lucky in that I inherited my parents' house. Otherwise, I would never in a million years be able to afford to live in this city. So I've got a lovely half of Victorian house. And on one side of me, they're council. The people are council flats. That's municipal housing.
Do you know the American term for that?
No.
Project housing.
Oh, yes.
You just learned.
Right. Okay. Thank you. And I do speak fluent North American, David. So really, I think I might have even known that somewhere. And so on one side, I've got council housing, project housing. On the other side, I've got housing association, which is subsidised. And then in that same house, they're an owner-occupier like myself. And so it's a really mixed street, and I like that. And that's one of the things I like about London. I wouldn't want them all to be like me, owner-occupiers, and going around, you know, the sort of thought police and that sort of thing. I like the fact that this is a mixed city. And so some areas get remorselessly gentrified, and ordinary people cannot afford to live in them, nurses, teachers. And I think that's the thing I dislike about London, the fact that it certainly the central bits, you have to be really rich to be able to live there.
Mm. And we've really seen this happen in our time in London, haven't we?
Yeah.
Well, let's narrow the focus, you know, down to London Walk. So, you know, big likes and any dislikes about...
Yes, there's lots of things I dislike about London Walks because I don't like the bad weather. I don't like going out in the rain, but you've just got to do it.
Yeah.
I don't like it when it's cold. But having said that, other times, I mean, I just think I am so lucky to be paid to show off. Show off, and not show off in a nasty way. I'm slightly taking the mickey out of myself, but I love to be paid to do what I love doing and to tell people about the city. And people say to me, how do you remember it all? I say to them, I don't have to remember anything. I have to remember something, which sounds like a bit of stupid sophistry. But what I mean by that is, it doesn't matter if I forget a particular date. It doesn't matter if I forget a particular fact. I haven't got a script. I just have to have something of interest to say. So all my walks are different every time I do them. And I like the fact that it becomes difficult because of the different people on the walk.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful that we don't work from a script and thus we can be open and responsive and you get a feel for your audiences.
Yes.
A certain audience you'll take one way, another audience you'll go a different way, et cetera. And for the most part, 99%, 99.99%, the people are wonderful.
Yeah.
Although occasionally there'll be someone who's either a real irritant or... I'm thinking that, wasn't there someone who complained about something you said about a lost cat or something? That's a nice tale. Can you tell them about that?
Yes, this is the Highgate Walk. And I just noticed that there was a picture of a lost cat with a reward of £50. And then we walked up the hill. There was another reward for a lost cat for £500. And I said, the higher up the hill you get, the more expensive the houses, and the higher the rewards for lost cats. So if you are going to nick a cat, steal a cat, I suggest you steal one from the top of the hill. Anyway, this woman came up to me and said, I would think you must now make a statement because you're encouraging people in the walk to steal cats. And because I also make a joke about other animals, because I talk about a horse 5,000 feet up in the air, a chicken stuffed with ice by Bacon, and swearing loyalty to the village of Highgate on the horns of a live ox, because they're all things that I talk about during the walk, and I sort of do it, tell them that I'm going to say that. And she said, also, I think these, you must not tell these stories of animal cruelty. So, you know, I don't believe in God, but if there was one, when he was giving out a sense of humour, that woman was at the back of the queue. And so I said, I tell you what, look, I'm going to tell those stories. I'm going to tell those stories. I tell you what, I'm going to give you your money back. And I think you should go away. So anyway, she did. But she wrote this email saying that I was encouraging people to tell cats. I don't think anyone apart from her thought that I meant this. It's a little thing called irony,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, we got this email from this woman who said that she would also start a campaign of various animal rights activists against me. But I've survived that campaign. It didn't seem to surface anywhere.
Richard, any favourite books on London? Books that have influenced you, that you said a lot of story about?
Yeah, there are so many of them, aren't there? I like Peter Ackroyd. But he's can be discursive and imaginative and imagine what something was like where we don't know. And he's written London, the biography. And London, the novel is quite nice by Rutherford, I think, because it goes through the whole of the ages. But there are so many books about London. I don't know if I have a favourite one.
Right.
You can always learn something about London.
There's always.
And the other thing is, I get most of my, a lot of my good stories from the people on the walks. And I shamelessly steal their material and repeat them the next time. And people are funny. Some one woman stuck her head out of her house in Mayfair and said, don't stand outside my house. And I said, well, we're on the other side of the road. So she said, I'm going to call the police on you. So I said, well, of course, you're at liberty to do that. But I am going to remain here talking to my group. And 2 weeks later, a woman stuck her head out. And I thought, oh, God, here we go. This was in a different house. Also Mayfair. Hello, would you like to come in? She said. And all of us trooped in, about 30 of us. And she took us round the whole house. So it just shows you, some people are delightful.
Yeah. Just about every London Walks guide sooner or later has that experience. Someone would invite 20 or 30 strangers into their house and show them around. It's just delightful.
This woman was seriously rich as well. I mean, lots of things to pinch if anybody had put them in their pockets. But no, she was great.
And did she do a little guiding herself when she was in her house?
She took us. I had this built in the year 2000 and this was originally here and this is the original 18th century part of the house.
Fantastic. And that was Mayfair.
That was Mayfair.
Yeah. How many walks are you up to now? How many do you think you know, approximately?
About 40.
40. My goodness. 40. Are you going to stop or are you going to go on learning them, Richard?
Well, I am...
Creating them.
I am creating them, but less now than I did before.
Right. Yeah. So if things were normal, you would guide how many times a week, about?
8 to 10.
Eight to ten times a week. Yeah. Very good. Okay, well, I'm going to have you back, but this is a really good start.
Good.
So I think you've just been playing tennis. I think we'll get some lunch into you now.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Thank you, David.